Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Peterson strobe tuners are quite literally the best tuners in the world. Available in the form of the Stomp HD pedal, the Strobo Clip Clip-On, and even an iOS and Android-supported strobe tuning app! The Strobo Stomp HD comes in an incredibly high-quality standard effects pedal size chassis with an absolutely whopping LCD screen size and user-defined variable color display, featuring over 100 exclusive sweetened tunings designed to help correct inherent tuning issues exhibited by many instruments. And the guided tunings mode, my favorite, displays numeric string values instead of traditional note names, making for surefire, intuitive, and rapid retuning to any number of open and alternative tunings. Peterson tuners make tuning accuracy simple and definite. It's probably the most important part of your pedal board, so why go for anything other than the best? Check them out at petersontuners.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. Season 2, Episode 14. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
The pubs are open for the first time and, in months.
And you've made Matt me. Knight. God damn it. Yes, I have actually. We are recording on the first day that the pubs are back open. I kind of realised this, but I'm glad we're missing it. Just think, they're all going to be masses of people everywhere. They're going to be. You're going to get
blue sky
sick.
Out there, Joe.
Blue sky earlier. I don't want to sit in a pub.
It snowed this morning earlier. For me as well. But I have. Yeah. I've spent the last year purchasing really nice winter jackets. So
well, plural. Well, how many are you going to wear?
Oh, just a few.
All of them.
No, have like, you decided that because you don't buy real amps anymore, you just buy plugins, that you've replaced all that real estate that you're saving by not having amps with winter coats?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was looking at like Joe Pesci in the movie Home Alone, and I was like, he looks great in that. Like the rolled beanie, the long jacket, the fingerless gloves. I was like, this is a strong look.
I mean, he doesn't look great in it. He looks like he's been beaten up the whole time. Like even at the start of the movie, he's had a hard day at the start.
I've got time for that look. I've got time for that man. I think he's awesome. But you know that look especially. You know, that's what I'm going to try and bring to you know us all getting to be able to see each other again. I'm going to try and bring a little bit of Joe Pesci.
So a few years ago, I went to see the Frankie Valli musical. You guys into Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons?
Absolutely. Not really. Not seen the musical, though.
Musical's good. I haven't seen the movie. I'd like to see the movie, but I assume it's basically the same. But in there, they basically talked about the fact that that was all like kind of Frankie Valli meeting the band, meeting the Four Seasons. Was all down to Joe Pesci. Like Frankie Valli was just kind of like a singer in the clubs in New York at the time. And Joe Pesci was kind of, you know, an up and coming member of the
mafia,
an up and coming businessman, I guess we could say. And he spotted Frankie Valli and they became mates. And then he introduced him to Bob Gaudio, who's the other guy in who was like the other songwriter in the Four Seasons, they became like lifelong friends, and it was all down to Joe Pesci. And I think he actually is the one who made the musical happen. I think he was the guy who kind of pushed that through. I think he was like executive producer or whatever.
Awesome.
So like, you know, he continues to be a excellent dude, Joe Pesci.
What a man. Anyway, I'm going to try and remember at the start this week, because I keep doing it at the end of the podcast. So I'm going to just welcome our new patrons at the start of this week. A second welcome to Holly Simpson, who just joined us a couple of weeks ago, has upgraded to the top tier, our $10 tier.
Legend.
So Holly's name will join the Patreon song at the end of this episode. Also, joining us is Peter Darling. Thank you very much, Peter Darling.
Legend.
See what I did there.
That is a good name.
There's a little bit of extra songage at the end of this episode from Tige Harmon, because Tige actually joined us quite some time ago and then upgraded to the $10 tier. But actually, the way Patreon does it can be a little confusing, so you can just overpay for your same tier without it updating you. You have to select the tier. So he was still a $5 tier, but he was overpaying for it. He's paying double, wanting to be a $10 tier. And he eventually messaged me and was like, why do you never say my name? It was because I didn't know. So I'm doing the normal song, but I've also made a little song just for Tige to make up for all the time. So he's got his own special song there at the end. But yes, welcome. You know, dear listener, if you want to join us on Patreon, you get loads of extra content and, you know, plus the chance to be in our Patreon song. You can go and check us out at patreon.com/guitar nerds. Speaking of all things guitar nerds, Matt, we're starting the new home recording guide. We're actually recording that this week, so that's kicking off.
The difficult second season.
third season, Matt. It's the third season. You weren't on the first.
Actually, that's even worse. The incredibly difficult third album. I'm excited now that I have things up and running, and I'm excited to put pen to paper or guitar notes to DAW, finally. It's actually helped me kind of write a little bit more and come up with a few more ideas. What I'm sort of struggling with at the moment is turning what is a 8-bar chord progression into like a whole song. But I've kind of found that using Easy Drummer has been really good for that, because you can kind of just sketch pad out a bunch of stuff over a drum beat, and you kind of know you're sort of recording in time, and then you can go in and sort of like mess around with the order a bit more. But one thing I am excited to talk to the guys at Personas about, Joe Gilder.
Joe Gilder's the Personas studio engineer, who we're having as a guest on the first episode.
Because I saw that they updated it recently, and I don't know if this is unique to Personas or there are other DAWs that have it, but like a song arranger mode. So you can kind of lay out a guitar track on the timeline of, you know, audio timeline, and you can cut it into sections, and then you can kind of like drag and drop it into like different, so you can kind of mess around with like an order of an entire song as a separate timeline at the top. So if you're like, oh, I wonder what this part would sound like before this, and I've sort of been doing a rough kind of version of that in Easy Drummer, but yeah, just sort of developing a songwriting skill, I guess, you know, rather than just going, oh, this riff sounds cool, and then going, yeah, it's not so cool if you just loop it for like 20 minutes. But it's been really good to actually like record something, and I would like to be able to have just a few tracks at the end of the year that are sort of recorded, mixed and mastered. And I think this time, Joe, we're going to go for we haven't really discussed it properly, but I think we were probably going to try and go for maybe a different style, but also maybe a longer song, maybe try and add some different parts in.
It's going to be
very, very exciting. And I've also bought a bunch of new stuff, and, you know, I want to try and mic up some amps properly, and all of that.
Oh yeah, because you've got your little mic clip that will go on either of your cabs. That's exciting. What amp head are you running most at the moment?
So I am mixing the Morgan PR12 and the Rajani VOD50. The Morgan's obviously amazing. That sort of like high powered Princeton sort of thing. But the Rajani's kind of like a, I don't know, like a twin, like a silver panel twin, I guess, in some ways. But the drive channel's much more like a Marshall, so it's sort of almost like two amps in one. But the clean channel, the reverb is amazing. I spoke about it before, but it's that sort of like big spring reverb. You can have this kind of ridiculous depth on it. So I'm running that into a 112 and the Morgan into a 112. But yeah, I want to start sort of recording the dry sound and the wet sound and a DI, so I can, you know, maybe do some reamping later or something like that. But just kind of messing around with sounds, I guess. Something I've never really done before, rather than just going, right, I'm going to plug my pedal board in and make noises for 2 hours. Like, actually trying to give myself a project and focus
some
on that.
Coherence.
And that's been really enjoyable. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I will write an ambient album, I'm sure. But no, it's been nice to actually, like, yeah, have a project and work on different things and actually learn a few different skills, I guess. Really wish I'd started about 15 years ago. because, yeah, it's just something I'm like, oh, man, I just, yeah, really, really missed an opportunity. So I'd say that anyone listening, you know, there's no better time than right now to start recording some notes.
No,
I would absolutely say use that as your ongoing fuel as well, Ma, because it sounds like you're in a good, inspired place.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying hearing, like, I always love hearing about other people's workflows and what's kind of helping them to write. For me, it was like switching DAW was a huge thing. Like, I worked in Pro Tools for years and thought, you know, God, this is like, it's the industry standard. So, like, what better tool could there be for my creativity? And then when I switched, like, years later to Ableton, something just clicked completely differently in terms of getting from having no idea to having like a 4-track idea down. And like you say, like, just when you find a tool that's conducive to more than looping your own part for 20 minutes straight and wondering why you haven't released an album of it yet. It's it's just a really good feeling when you find something.
I think as well, like, you know, I did some filming last week with a guitar friend of mine, and we did a photo shoot a couple of weeks ago with a couple of other people that I know. And I was like, even in the lockdown times that we found ourselves in, I'm like, oh man, this is such a great opportunity to still collaborate. You know, people can record at home, and, you know, I'm excited to kind of like write some music with, you know, some of my friends, and then like back and forth a few tracks, like, oh, can you do something on this, or, you know, I'm missing a part for this, do you fancy sort of like giving something a go, and actually use that as a kind of way to like work with people, and then hopefully, absolutely, you know, when things are better, you know, have a few songs that I can actually like play in a band with. I was just thinking the other day, I was like, I really would like to play at least one more gig before I die. It's been like 10 years since I played a gig, I think. 10 years?
Oh, has it? Oh, no way. Right, okay.
It must be the last gig I did. Yeah.
Was it a show that I put on?
No. I can't actually remember what that show was now. No.
Wow. That's a long
old
time.
It's been about 10 years. Yeah, I would say it's been about 10 years. So, you know, I just like, I don't want to leave it another 10 years. Like I just said, I can't believe I left it 15 years before I actually tried to record anything. I don't know, something clicked recently where I'm like, you don't have to play it. I don't know, for so long. And I think maybe a bit of like BIM came into this where it's like, oh, if you're going to play in a band and you need to like, you know, be a manager and you need to like promote all this stuff and you need to be successful. And I'm like, I think that stuck with me for so long. And now I'm like, no, I just want to like play in a band for fun and like talk to people who also play instruments. and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it not be serious. I think for so long I've been like, oh, if I'm going to record something, it's going to have to be like really serious. And, you know, a lot of my job has got in the way before. And, you know, now that I work from home, I've got all this more time. And I'm like, I want to share some creativity with some people. So, yeah, I'm sort of excited for writing some stuff down, as it were, so that when we can do more of that, I've actually like, I can find some band members and go, hey, look, here's some things I wrote. Why don't we try that? So, yeah.
The artistic journey of Matt Knight.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to be able to micromanage the hell out of those rehearsals.
Exactly.
Be like, right, exactly. Guys, we're 6 minutes in.
Yeah.
Here are my loops.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. And, yeah, at the same time, though, also talking to my friend who's got a couple of cool ambient projects on at the moment, which I think I spoke about a few weeks ago, and he's sort of like leading me further down the rabbit hole of Eurorack, and I'm like, maybe I'll just start one-man Eurorack project and turn up to Eurorack jam nights. I'm gonna plug this module in and you plug it into that. Sounds great. But no, I must you know, record.
I feel like that's the inevitable end result of you.
Yeah, maybe. And actually, one other thing, just try and listen to some more music, like different music, and listen to music with the and try and take ideas from it and kind of like break things down, listen to it and go, oh yeah, that drum beat's cool, like I might try something like that, you know. So yeah, I kind of feel like re-inspired by music recently.
You which sound is great. It's a you sound
bloody
re-inspired.
Great feeling.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
I feel incredibly rare joy at hearing all the things you have to say just now. It's very good.
Yes.
Now I want to talk about some stuff that we've got. Sorry, I felt like I interrupted you then, Matt. I didn't mean to. If you're still on a roll, keep going.
No. I was going to say I was inspired by a quote which has stuck with me, which is the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is today. And I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but, you know, that's kind of how I feel with the music in some ways. It's like, probably should have started 20 years ago, but the next best time is to start right now.
Do it.
Totally.
Do it. Yeah. Totally.
Very true.
Absolutely.
You can cut me off now, Joe.
Very well. Now, I wanted to talk. I'm very excited about this thing that we got delivered this week. So I got a message from Shotmaker Instruments in Poland. And
the 90s the 90s emo band, Shotmaker.
There was a 90s emo band called Shotmaker? I didn't know
that.
Anyway, so they said to me, they messaged me and they said, would you like the heroin? And I said, absolutely. So they've sent...
Heroin, the 90s emo band.
Yes, exactly. No, so they make a couple of pedals, the Heroin and the Heroin Deluxe. And... yeah, they sent this across to us, and I absolutely love it. Now, it's really quite an interest. So it's a drive pedal, but it's so much more than that. In fact, the guys at Shotmaker weren't even sure what to call this pedal, because it's part preamp, drive, distortion, fuzz. It's kind of got all of those things. But I think what makes specifically the Heroin Deluxe so interesting and so different is the way that the controls work on there, because they're a little bit unusual. The control names are like Master, Pre, High Cut, Sustain 1, Sustain 2, and there's a Bright Switch as well. And the way it works is your Master control is an amp-like boost, it's silicone transistor based, so it provides like a 50s power amp style drive, but it's very reactive, so it compresses and it clips the more you turn it up, which is very interesting. So you can use that, and this is what I actually really liked, this is where this pedal really came to life for me, is really relying a lot on that and rolling off an awful lot of the other controls, and you get a really nice subtle tone, which if you stuck everything at 12 o'clock on this pedal, you would be nowhere near. It would be so drivey at that stage. So it's like you almost have to shut down a lot of things to get something quite subtle, but it's so very dynamic and so interesting and so rich sounding, and it worked fantastically on bass. I really love that control especially. And then you've got the pre-control, which they say acts like a post-phase inverter master volume. So it ranges from 60s to 70s era drive, and then you crank it, you get some real fuzz. And then you have the sustain circuit, which is an extra gain stage in the pre, which they say takes you to more sort of 80s and 90s tones. So that sustain circuit's kind of working with the pre. And then there's basically, it's a two-button drive. So you've got your on-off, and then your second switch is switching you between your two sustain options. You've got two sustain controls, one for one and one for two. So it's great if you want to kind of use it subtly on one and use it as like a kind of drivey, dynamic preamp, and then use that second switch with the sustain kind of cranked, and you've got an you've got kind of a good vintage sounding fuzz. And there's an awful lot of substance to the tone if you kick in that sustain, like a lot of low end if you roll off that high cut.
Is the sustain, can you switch the sustain on or off, or is it just between one or two?
So it's just between one and two, but you could roll it off, obviously.
Yeah, you could roll one of them off. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's you know, I thought I'd do my my favourite thing and read the manual very, very quickly. It's actually quite helpful to just understand a little bit more about their thought process and what it is. And it's effectively an amp with a distortion pedal built in, which I think is quite cool. That's kind of the way that they sort of look at it and describe it in the manual. But I like this idea of that you've got a master volume sort of like power amp section, you've got a preamp section, and then your preamp section has a bit of, you know, a distortion circuit in it. And I can imagine, like you say, Joe, probably incredibly, incredibly versatile.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of it. It was just like, this was such a unique way to look at the incredibly well-trodden path of making a drive pedal. I really love the controls. Like, once you understand the controls, I think it, then you know how to use it. And that sounds like a stupid thing to say, but I mean, you have to understand that they're different. I watched a demo just before the pedal had turned up by Dip Switch Demos, you know, friend of the podcast, and they on that demo, they said that when they plugged the pedal in, they had everything at 12 o'clock, and it was just like, this is a, you know, this is a drive pedal, because that's kind of what you do, isn't it, when you plug in a drive pedal, put everything in the middle and then cut or add based
on that.
Work
your way from there. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas this is just a totally, you almost have to take it one control at a time, adding it in as much as you want. Like, start with a master, but with everything else off, and then bring in the other things to sort of tailor your tone. I thought it was a fantastic way, and made me, because I liked how I could shape the tone so much, it made me really able to shape the tone exactly how I wanted it. Like, I didn't feel like I was getting the best that I could out of this. I felt like I was getting absolutely everything I wanted out of the pedal.
So is it kind of like there's like a preset EQ, and you can just sort of roll off some of the top end? Because there's no tone control per se, is there?
It's an interesting choice. That high cut is substantial, though. It kind of, it's not just sort of, I guess you'd almost be fooled in the name by thinking it would work like a kind of a passive tone on a guitar, but it's incredibly dynamic.
It's not just.
I feel like it's manipulating a master tone, you know, rather than getting a high cut. And then there's also a bright switch as well on the deluxe, which I also feel is oddly named, because it feels more like it changes the response of everything. It's almost like a different preset for the entire pedal. Everything feels different with the bright switch on. It doesn't just add a little bit of top. It's like, this is a different voicing for the pedal entirely. I absolutely loved it. I don't normally get this excited about sort of drive pedals, but it sounded fantastic. Sounded as good on bass as it did guitar. Actually, I loved it on bass. I was really annoyed. I sort of had it out and I had my pedal board to the side, and I was like, oh, this is really good. And I was like, I'll just plug in, you know, the drive setup that I use on my pedal board. And I was like, oh no, it sounds better. And I've got like, you know, two stack drives and a compressor. Actually, three stack drives, including the internal treble boost on the MS3. Three stack drives and a compressor, like shaping my ultimate drive tone. And they didn't sound as good as just the
And you just plugged
drives.
In one pedal and it sounded
yeah.
better.
Yeah, exactly. This could be
classic Joe Branton, yeah. Joe Magpie Branton finding a new shiny thing to have a look at for the day.
That's exactly what this is. But I really like it, listeners. Check it out. Shotmaker is the company, and they just do the Heroin and the Heroin Deluxe as their pedals. I don't think.
Oh, nice. Are they a new company? Or
I believe so, yeah, yeah.
Sort of getting their start.
Relatively new. They'd certainly managed to get this out to quite a few sort of YouTube demo people.
Sure.
So there is there's some interesting videos out there to watch. But, yeah, I just a really listener. Watch some videos. I think they all do a good job of showing off this pedal. But, yeah, a fantastic drive option if you're looking for something that's wholly unique and not, you know, just a Tube Screamer or a Blues Driver copycat sort of thing. It's it's very cool, very fun. Our friends at iZotope have just made their portable recording solution, the Spire Studio, even better. Designed with simplicity and ease of use at its core, the Spire Studio gives you access to obscenely good and alarmingly advanced recording quality without needing prior knowledge of a DAW or access to a high-spec computer or a bunch of plugins. The second-generation Spire Studio ups the stakes by offering ultra-low noise preamps that offer smoother, quieter recording and increased storage capacity. There's also Spire Pro, an optional subscription service accessed via the iOS app, which includes audio repair technology from iZotope's RX software, so you can fix noise, popping, clipping and plosive issues, and a personalized sound check feature that listens and learns from your voice and environment. Record anywhere, whenever inspiration strikes. Check them out at iZotope.com. So, you know, in the thing I want to move on to next is I want to talk about tuners. Specifically, I want to talk about Peterson tuners, because we got sent some of their tuning devices. Now, a tuner is the sort of thing I expect Jay to get excited about, as it's kind of an accessory, but it's something that I have definitely not given a fair crack of the whip to. In fact, you know, I often don't have one on my board. Like, I'll just use the built-in one on the MS3 or whatever. So, you know, it's something that I've never really cared about the ones that are supposed to be better than others. It all seems like close enough for rock and roll seems to kind of make sense. But my goodness, Peterson tuners, aren't they actually pretty good? They're kind of like the gold standard of tuners, and I didn't really realize this.
I mean, the tuner of the 60s and 70s, like, you know, probably the most expensive tuners ever made. But they're analog tuners. And I mean, they still make one now, a fully analog dial strobe tuner. I think they invented the strobe tuner. I mean, that's like $800, I think.
Wow. They do some tip top tuners. And of course, the whole thing is the whole idea of strobe tuning, which I didn't really know about until I got the Strobo Stomp HD and the Strobo Clip HD, their clip-on tuner and their standard sort of compact effects pedal size thing. But I didn't know about strobe tuning, and I guess that's how tuning kind of started, or, you know, how the first tuners were working, via actual strobe lights rather than just something that tells me it's E.
Yeah. I don't know how do they work? Do you know how they work, Matty? I assume you know how they work.
I don't know. I know how you tune to them, but I don't know how they actually work. I'm guessing it's something to do with electricity.
That's Thomas Edison.
Yeah, I don't know, if I'm being perfectly honest. Well, I mean, a little bit of the tuner history in some ways, but I mean, this was the main way that tuners worked. I mean, I remember seeing for sale like Jimmy Page's old strobe tuner from like the mid 60s, and they were like these massive boxes, looked like a lunchbox basically, like on top of his amp. that you sort of like plugged into. But yeah, I mean, they've been around for a very, very long time.
Well, I mean, it took... Sorry, Jay, you go.
I was just going to say, it is kind of funny when you think about it, really, because, you know, you think about this of tunas of being these kind of like just something that have always been around. I mean, people our age, I guess, do anyway. Think of the tunas that have always been around, and it's just like, oh, yeah, I'll just get my tuna or whatever. But you don't even have to go that far back. It's only been in the last 10 years that really, well, maybe, okay, maybe like 12 years or so, that we started seeing clip-on tunas. You know, you really don't have to go clip-on tunas,
yeah.
I'm not even sure really you need to caveat it. I think, you know, when I first started working at GAC in 2009, there weren't any clip-on tunas. You know, it was all plug-in stuff. It was all if you didn't have a TU3, and for a long time the TU3 was the only thing you could get, and then there was the Korg Pitch Black, and then TC came out with the Polytune, which obviously revolutionized a load of stuff. And then other than that, it was all handheld products like the Korg CA1 or GA1 if you didn't have the chromatic version. And then the Boss TU80, which was a great tuner. You know, you think about like when it comes to kind of clip-on tuners, the IntelliTune was the first one that I can think of. And they were really expensive, really expensive.
Yeah, I think... the Boss TU12, the needle tuner, came out in 88. And I think that was the first portable, like widely available analog needle tuner.
It's just so mad to think about.
Well,
like, I mean, you know, something that you just take so for granted nowadays. It's like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I tune on my phone. Do you know what I mean? Like, or I use the tuner on my amp. Like, there's just tuners everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we've said it before, but TU2 was the first floor pedal tuner.
Yeah.
And that was 1998.
Wow.
Yeah.
And actually, the story goes that Boss had the technology for a number of years, but was like, who's gonna buy one? Because everyone's got like a TU12 or what? I mean, the old BCBs up until recently had the space for your TU12, you know, to go in the top. And that's how everyone used it. I mean, those analog tuners are amazing, and I mean that's why Peterson so well known, because the accuracy of the strobe tuning was so incredible.
Well, and that actually kind of leads on to something that sort of makes these pedals great, because I will admit when I got these, I kind of was like, well, I know these are good tuners, but also like, does it matter? What's the difference going to be? And other than, you know, the pedal actually being incredibly well built, I will say, just to caveat, it took me a little while to get used to the strobing, like, you know, the direction that the strobes move in for you to be sharp or flat, it was unfamiliar to me, as we're all more used to, or I guess if you don't use a Peterson tuner, you're more used to a needle-based kind of tuning system. Mm. So it took a while
even the TU2 had strobing on, didn't it, Matthew?
It did, yeah. It had a strobe mode, didn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, Jacob. I was just going to carry on and just say that, you know, it took me a little while to get used to the strobing, but then after I was settled in, I was like, okay, well, now I know how to use this. I can see already off the bat how much more accurate this is going to be. But it's the options, as if I'd ever realized options were going to be something that was important in a tuner. But they'd added some additional things, which I thought was super cool. One of the really useful things I thought was, because you can build your own tuning types in there, I can set tunings that apply string numbers instead of note names, which is really useful if you use, I know that sounds weird, but if you use a lot of different tunings and you switch between them a lot, it's hard to keep track of maybe, oh, now, you know, my third string is
G. So you're right, so you move on to like song 4 and in song four you're playing in dadgad and you're like, oh, hang on a sec, what string is the G string? Like,
exactly.
Or, actually, or what note is it?
G. Yeah. It's still G. Yeah, sorry, what note is it? Yeah, of course, yeah. Because it's still G. And actually the note is still G in dadgad, which was dreadful example, but I see exactly what you mean. That is quite an interesting way of doing it.
I just thought really smart, like the sort of thing you don't expect to see, but very, very useful. And then the thing that I think was most interesting, which certainly seems to be something that the team at Peterson seem to be talking about, is the idea of sweetened tunings. And that's sweetened tunings is something you get on the clip as well. That's something you can access via the clip by just flicking through, selecting your instrument. You can have your sweetened guitar or sweetened bass tunings.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was just wondering, what is the sweetened tuning that they speak of?
Well, I'm glad that you asked, because
gladly.
So sweetened tuning is okay. So I have to kind
crikey.
Of read.
This has been done. This after disconnecting and then reconnecting. This has gone so smoothly, Joe. I don't think it's noticed. I think it's
Thank
fine.
You. No, it was good. It was good. No one noticed the interruption between that. That's good. Okay, fine. So tunings are based on intervals, not the notes themselves, but the spaces in between those notes. So when appropriately applied, these tunings adjust the space between certain notes so that said notes will sound better together. If that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
So for instance, there's an ideal amount of space between a root note and the fifth note above it. And when the distance is adjusted perfectly, the two notes, when played together, sound very good, and it results in, it means that you get chords that sound enhancedly good. But the adjustment does have some downsides, because it means that because of those necessary changes in the intervals between the other five notes in the scale, so essentially
the tuner will pick up a slightly wrong note.
Exactly. So the end result
report it as correct.
Yes. So the end result is that, they fay the fifths and thirds, etc. So it means that you end up with some great sounding chords, but there are others that won't sound as good. So it's kind of it's you're getting one thing at the expense of others.
Do you mean in the sense that you would, because what I'm imagining from what you're saying is that I would have to adapt some of my chords in playing a pre-written song? Is that sort of what you're getting at?
No, you wouldn't be able to adapt them. Some would just sound out of tune if you use this, but it's designed to be used carefully, and it would only be very slight. I kind of feel like I didn't feel like they sounded out of tune. I think to sort of the people at Peterson, probably hearing things within a scent of a note, I imagine it does. But it just means some things will sound a bit trashier than others.
So you talking about literally like, okay, I can play, if I play G, D, and E, but I play them tuned with my Boss TU-3 or tuned with my Peterson strobe tuner, they'll sound different.
If you select the sweetened tunings option on the Peterson strobe tuner, then yes. But here's a thing. This is a fun, cool thing that you can do with the Peterson tuner. If you're recording, you could record a guitar line in with normal, our standard equal temperament tuning, and then you could sweeten tune your guitar and record that same part in, play them alongside each other, and you will get this natural, lush chorusing sound.
It does make a difference, because I actually had one of the original Peterson Strobe Stomp foot pedals, and I used to use the sweeten tuning, which just retuned the high E string, and it made a massive difference. Like an audible difference, because a guitar is just not a very well intonated instrument. Mm-hmm. And especially the way that we tune it is very weird. Because strobe tuners are so much, they're more accurate, even though electronic tuners are really accurate. These are like super, super accurate. Those little bits of frequency make a tiny difference, but an audible one. And actually,
I guess it's the same as like, or to a similar degree to like when Diodario came out with the balanced tension strings, you know. Mm-hmm. People use 10 to 46 because, well, that's the string gauge that you use.
That's a great comparison.
And then they came up with a totally different thing.
Yeah, that's what came to mind as well for me, Joe. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, you know, about kind of redressing the relationship between the strings, I guess, is essentially you're doing the same thing, but with the notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, apart from anything, this sounds like the sort of thing that would really, really annoy a load of people. People being like, "Will you say my guitar's? You could tune my guitar rock." So, because of that, I am, of course, 100% into it. You know, anything that's gonna annoy someone.
Yeah, I was trying to role play an annoyed musician. By the way, when I was asking about adapting chords, that was not me not getting it yet. Just to clarify, So just so I'm clear, and maybe it'll clear it up for some listeners as well. Are we talking about like quite fine amounts of adaptations on the part of the tuner? So
exactly, in
our standard guitar tuning, we are still coming extremely close to EAD GBE, but by a matter of sense, the sweetened tuning is altering it to sound better. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yes. Notes in a different way, essentially. Them to do with their intervals rather than the notes, so considering them in relationship to each other rather than each other. It blows my mind, but it's so cool. I mean, it's amazing, it's cool, isn't it? It's so geeky. But I was like, this is actually kind of awesome. I thought the actual pedal itself was fantastic, but the fact that you get all of that on the clip-on, in fact you get it all on the phone app as well.
It's really impressive.
It's an expensive phone app. It's 10 quid, which is, you know, more than most tuning apps will cost, but you know, for all the additions, I think that is pretty cool.
I think as well, I spent a bit of time listening and quickly reading how a strobe tuner works, which I think Jay will be really into. He likes science and stuff. So it's a spinning disc that spins at a particular rotation speed for a fixed note. And then the electrical guitar signal from a pickup will then flash an LED at the amount of times per second for that frequency range. So, okay, for example, if you played an A on the fifth fret of the sixth string, which is 110 hertz, the lamp would flash at 110 times or 440 times per second, and then the disc that spins rotates at a fixed speed set by the user. Each disc rotation is set to a particular frequency, and then when the two match up, it gives a visual impression that the disc slows down, but it's spinning. The persistence of vision from the strobing effect. So effectively,
that is very interesting.
That's why they can be so accurate. So it says here as well that because of that, they work really well for instruments that have very short voices. So things like steel pans, apparently, or even tuning things like music boxes, which use like little teeth on a needle. The voice of the note, the decay of the note is so short that normal tuners don't work, but strobe tuners can. They can pick up the note that quickly.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so that's why they can be so accurate. They reckon that a strobe system can be up to 30 times more accurate than a normal electronic tuner. So there we go.
Yeah.
Crazy. A crazy technology that someone... How someone decided that was a thing at some point, I'm guessing in the 50s or 60s. Amazing. But yeah, I think their most, apparently their most expensive strobe tuner at one point was about $3,500 and had 12 separate discs so it could tune chords. 12 discs, one for each pitch of equally tempered octaves. So yeah, it display, you could display single notes or chords and then each note's overtone substructure simultaneously.
Of course.
So you could be super in tune.
That's, you've got a really, for people who really care about their tuning.
Yeah, but apparently it's handy for people that, I was just reading here, things like tuning musical bells or modal displays of bells partials. So different notes that the overtone or different overtones that like instruments like that produce.
I'd imagine in the manufacturing of instruments like that would have to be a massive consideration.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Unless I don't know about percussion or bells, but I would imagine the user can't alter the tuning after the time. I remember once going into my local metaphysical store in Dublin. My local metaphysical store.
Oh.
Where else would you buy your crystals and tarot cards?
It was
a dark time. But I went in and on this particular day, the lady working there who hilariously was, you know, supposed to be all manner of zen, projecting only good vibes within the store was... her vibes were not good on this day. And it was because she ended up talking to me about it because obviously I was working in the music store up the road and we got talking about tuners. And I think she was using a clip. It was either a clip tuner or one of the handheld ones like we spoke about earlier with a mic. And essentially all of the singing bowls that she had just had delivered were out of tune.
Out of tune? No way. That is like that. Wow. Not good. That is really interesting.
Well, I mean, in her case, it was completely fair enough. I mean, that's a, you know, obviously as stringed instrument players, we, you know, maybe there are things we take for granted. I mean, we can talk all day about intonation, but at least we have tuners, you know what I mean? Like, or like tuner pegs to use.
Yeah, but if you've bought a singing bowl, it's like, well, it either plays the note that you want it to play or it plays the note that it advertises or it doesn't.
Well, exactly, yeah. And in terms of you know, whether you're into that sort of stuff or not, that's very important to get right. If you know, if the people buying them are using them for their intended purposes. So
she just
didn't want to upset a load of people's chakras. That was all.
Well, exactly. But so she was like checking the tuning with a clip-on tuner.
It was. I'm trying to remember. It was a clip-on or a. It was a clip-on or a handheld.
Amazing. Really cool.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was certainly a fully acoustic instrument. They're like, have you seen singing bowls or have you used them?
I love a singing bowl. One of my favourite Spotify playlists at the moment is Sound of the Singing Bowl.
Yeah, nice. If you want to talk sustain, the sustain from a singing bowl is unbelievable. Holding one in your hand. I have some friends who both use them and have them. I've never owned one. And I also have, I don't think, been able to get the sustain right. So sometimes I've held one in my hand and my friend would kind of really slowly work the, I don't know what it's called, the singing bowl stick around the inside of the rim.
Hit me with your singing bowl stick. Cool.
I a couple years ago, I went to Thomann. And so if you haven't been, the Thomann Music Store is like just insane. Mm-hmm. It's just, and they have an entire orchestral department. And in that department, there's a separate room for gongs and singing bowls. And they had about 100 different singing bowls on display, including one that I think was about $5,000 that is massive that you stand in. And the idea is that you stand in it and then you... you move the special singing bowl stick around and the whole bowl vibrates, and then it vibrates you to like a particular frequency.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely mental. And it was also the first time that I'd ever had a gong properly wand. Demonstrated.
Wand.
On singing bowl wand. Is that what it's called?
Yes,
it's
thank
called
you, a wand. Joe.
It's called a wand. But yeah, the first time that anyone had properly demoed a gong. Mm-hmm. And it is the most surreal experience. Like,
is that because of like the changing of the overtones and stuff? And
yeah,
because
you're not supposed to just like, you're not supposed to just like smash it, you know.
You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to just do Spinal Tap, basically.
No. Yeah, you're supposed to like basically just like rub it really gently for ages, and the vibrations build up over time, and then all these overtones change. It's just mad. And consider that the proper ones are hand hammered as well.
Yeah.
It's just.
That's incredible. Yeah. Right, this is something I need to get into.
It's a proper different world, isn't it? I mean, that's why I kind of get excited talking about the sustain from a singing bowl. It's like such an unassuming instrument. And again, you know, we're in a grouping of instruments as our main instruments where we, you know, can control the notes that we play and can control melody and all this sort of stuff. And it's just a completely different approach to sound.
I might buy one and mic it up and then run it through my pedal board.
Absolutely. I've been thinking about
that. 100%. That would be very cool.
Yeah, I've been thinking about getting a singing bowl. I really like them. Like you, Matty, I listen to a lot of like that sort of stuff on Spotify and on YouTube and stuff, and they do sound like magical. They really do sound magical, and they can get so loud as well. That's the crazy thing about them. Like if you're not careful, they can get really really loud.
How much are they?
Yeah, I think they vary in price, but like you don't have to spend
for 20 quid.
Yeah, easy. I mean, you can actually get them for 20 quid.
A singing bowl?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I sort of get the impression it's not dissimilar to sort of the cymbal business where like you can get a cymbal
but you probably shouldn't,
60-ish pounds, but
I mean, you can apply that
you
to
get
anything
a cymbal
in life. Yeah.
Wait, are you suggesting I can get a singing bowl splash? Just for like, you know, just before I get into the breakdown.
I think you would have to check with your local metaphysician. Which I'm not criticizing, by the way. I did admire this woman's attention to detail.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Really, like really, really amazing. I wonder if she was like, she tuned them. Like as that's just what she did, whether, you know, to check the quality of them, or whether she like played them and just, you know, essentially was able to pick it up by ear, like, you know, real musicians can when they're playing guitar. And I say real musicians as in not me. You know.
Fine, I'm just going to say it. You shouldn't be so harsh on yourself. I love the silence from Joe and Matt. God, guys. Just no one stepping in to come and
No. Like, in all seriousness, though, like, you know, it's not something that I've been any good at ever. And that's with, playing guitar that I've done for years and years and years. And I do wonder whether it's something that, like, she just played and was like, well, that doesn't sound right. Like,
oh yeah,
I better go and get a tuner, you know?
Yeah, I get you. I did wonder the same thing. Did it just sound off to her? Or in her line of work, does she practice something where she assesses them in a way in line with her healing work?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
trying so hard not to sound like I'm on either side of the fence here. but yeah, there you go.
Well, there
Pears
you go.
And tuners, everybody.
With a slight this tangent is... into singing bowls. Yeah. The singing bowl nerds. Oh, yeah. I prefer the tone of a quartz one compared to the, you know, more traditional hand-hammered brass. My wand has to be made out of pure mahogany for the ultimate tone. Singing bowl nerds. There we go.
If it hasn't been cut out of a Siberian cliff, then forget about it, mate. It's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crystal skull.
Now, we are actually, you know, we are pretty long in the tooth of this episode, and we haven't talked about, like, you know, any of the main stuff yet. So I'm going to talk about that stuff. I'm going to extend this slightly so that we can talk about that stuff. But Matt,
I mean,
Knight,
I've got absolutely no idea how long this episode's been because it's been over. You're going to have a nightmare editing it. It's going to be over four different tracks.
For the listener who doesn't understand what Jay's saying, this episode has broken down a few times, and with it goes the sort of clock that tells us how long we've been podcasting for. So yes, it's there you go, Matt. You recently acquired the new Generation 2 Isotope Spire Studio, which we've spoken a bit about on the last couple of weeks. I kind of think maybe the last couple of weeks, but it's something that for me this week I really got to actually spend some time with. And you know, you've got one of these as well, the Generation 2. How mm-hmm. are you finding it?
Yeah, you know what I like? To me, it's just a really good sketch pad for ideas very, very quickly. So even though I've sort of been messing around with the studio and kind of got things sort of set up so that, you know, if I've got Presonus loaded and I can kind of record a guitar in pretty quickly and, you know, load up Easy Drummer, but quite often I find that, like, in a lunch break or even at a weekend, if I'm just sort of having a coffee in the morning or something, and I might just play my acoustic or I might, you know, sort of tinker around on the bass, I'll come up with something and I'm like, I haven't got the time to, like, get the door loaded up and have a project ready to go. But with the Isotope, you can kind of just start up your phone, turn it on, and then just the preamps and the sound, the mic and everything's so good inside, you can just go, right, I'm going to start laying down a bit of a track. And it's just this great little pad for just capturing ideas really, really quickly. And even capturing alternate parts. You know, if I put down an acoustic, I might then like play another melody line over the top of it. But yeah, that it's just been great to have on my desk as something to just sort of go to
when I needed it. I think of it as like a guitar player's essential because it doesn't require that learning curve that, you know, knowing a DAW inside and out and mm-hmm. having mm-hmm. an interface and either a bunch of plugins or a complicated miking up, you know, thing. It is just, it's a great unit that is very much essentially a microphone for your phone. And coupled with the Isotope Spire Studio app, it just, it's super easy to use. Like, you don't need to know how DAWs work and you can make an entire track with it. I think that's what's kind of, I mean, the cool thing about the Isotope app is you can actually use it on its Todd. Like, because the Spire very much, the buttons that you have to control on the Spire Studio are things that you can also control on your phone through the app. So essentially what it is it's the mic and the preamp. That, and of course, the, you know, the XLR and jack-ins on the back of the Spire. But you can use the app on its own, even without the Spire Studio, which is really cool. And you can even get the Pro features, the Isotope Pro features. In fact, I think if you download the app, it might come with, like, you might get the Pro features free for 14 days or something like that, which is really cool. The Pro features include like the Isotope, like Ozone software for when you're exporting, so that's the mastering software for when you're exporting, the RX software, which is how it removes noise if you're, you know, if there are cars driving by outside or if there's just a ground hum in your room, and the auto tuning software, which is very good, and you're able to use super subtly, which you don't necessarily need if you're just, you know, as Matt says, using it as a sketch pad. But really cool additions.
One cool thing that I'm going to start doing with it, because actually I've been to a couple of things recently with this video shoot that I was doing. We were doing a pre-production day with this guitar player, and he left a mic on in the room the entire time. So, like, he was like, oh, if we play something and it sounds really good, like, I don't have to worry about setting things up. I'll just have a room mic on all of the time. And then we were coming up with ideas, and then he was like, oh, right, cool, I've captured that. I can go back over it and then record another part or re-record it. But it also captures conversations in between. So with the original Spire, even though I only got to do it literally, I think we had a first band rehearsal with a new project we sort of decided to kickstart one week before the whole place went into the whole country went into like total lockdown, we took it to a rehearsal studio and just turned it on, and then just sort of like captured a few ideas. All right, we're going to practice this, or this is the song I've got. Listen to it back, and then like, you know, played it back and came up with a few ideas. But doing a session like that and leaving it on the whole time, so you can capture the conversations between two people and saying, oh yeah, actually maybe we should try this or we should try that. So when you go back and you want to do like a full version in a DAW, you've got all like the notes in there as well. But one feature that I actually asked them to add, which they did include in the first generation, which carries, I believe carries over into this one, was I was creating ideas to send to someone else just as a WAV file. But I was like, when I went back to it, I'd forgotten the chords that I'd played. Like, I might come up with something in the moment. So they added a notepad in. So you can be like, oh, if you play something, you know, and you record 30 seconds of it, you know, and then you've got to go back to work or whatever, you can record, oh, right, okay, yeah, this was in C, I used a capo on the fifth fret, and I played these chords, which I thought was just really handy. Again, just that kind of sketchpad type thing.
Oh, wait, so, sorry, Matt, you can add that to...
You can,
as
add,
in after the fact, you're saying you can add that to like a saved session or yeah. a saved track.
Yeah,
I love that. I love everything you were saying about this. Is it like am I right in thinking this is like sort of bridging the gap between both mobile DAW and desktop DAW and the simple like audio notes app on our phones?
Exactly that. Yeah,
but, yeah. Exactly, it's just amazing. I feel like what a gap in the market to go for. Like, I'm sure you guys as well, like, know musicians, you know, who you consider super skilled, and you're hanging out with them and they're showing you notes off their phone and you just think, God, like, you know, you've so many incredible bits of music, you know, just sketched down. And to be able to multitrack that is just so, well, it's so efficient in one way, because, you know, if you're spending 5 minutes recording something, then it'll only take you one more minute to put another track over it and enhance your idea kind of straight away. But also, exactly like you touched on, Matt, like, for so many of us who are working from home now, the quiet for a lot of us of working from home certainly brings with it ideas. But, you know, it's so much harder to justify 15, 20 minutes setting up your, you know, your rig. Whereas, yeah, this seems to really be the perfect tool that can just sit on your desk and essentially be record ready within several taps on a phone. It's incredible.
And I think, you know, I've used it, you know, a few times if I've, you know, just playing around with a pedal board and done something a bit ambient just to kind of capture some sound at like nice high quality. I mean, Joe, obviously you did a few full tracks with it.
Last year we did some as well, didn't we, with the first generation
version.
We're going to do something we don't often do on the podcast. We are going to play a little sound sample. I made a funny little guitar. I know. I made a funny little guitar nerd song earlier today. So I only spent about half an hour on this. It's very, very rough and ready. But I thought this is kind of a great example of just what the Spire's capable of. You know, I recorded in like vocals, a pair of backing vocals, which I was able to pan, two acoustic guitars doing very similar things, again panned. I was able to plug in an electric directly. I used my Harmony Silhouette, plugged it directly into the jack out on the back, and used one of the Isotope Spire comes with some amp sims as well with effects, and it does a Fender Twin style or a Fender Deluxe style amplifier with loads of reverb and a nice bit of tremolo. So I used that for a bit of backing. I got my partner Emma's got glandular fever or mono for the Americans at the moment. So I was like, I was waking her up from bed where she was sleeping, being like, Emma, I need you to play piano on this thing. And she was like, oh God, I'm so sick. And I was like, come on, come downstairs and play piano. And I got her to sort of play, you know, in some little bits on there as well. But, you know, for something that was put together in 30 minutes, uses that nothing I have done has been done outside of the Spire Studio app and the plugins. And even able to just, you know, apply a little bit of auto-tune to the backing vocals to kind of smooth them out. Just an incredible incredible bit of kit for, you know, for something where you're just sort of getting down rough ideas. Here's the track, dear listener.
Well, I was thinking about guitar nerds whilst at work or on a drive. They got sweet butterscotch Telecasters and ES-175s. And I was in the bath this morning thinking about my favourite host. Was it the one with the impossible rig or he who's seeing a ghost? I said, G-U-I-T-A-R-N-E. R-D-S, oh, those guitar nerds, they're the best. Oh, hear me now. G-U-I-T-A-R-N-E. R-D-S, oh, those guitar nerds, they're the best. Are the very best.
There you go. There you go. So that,
I thought I was fantastic, Joe.
Really insightful, Joe.
Yes. Okay. Fine. That was, yes. More. But I did actually send it to you guys. So you
did. And I listened to it. I thought it sounded like Tom Petty.
Tom Petty.
I loved it. Oh. I thought it sounded like Johnny Cash's Hurt.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Did we listen to the song?
I didn't actually think it sounded like that.
Thank you very much.
I was hoping that would be casually lost in the recording for someone to listen back to.
What did Emma said to me when I played it to her? She said, it sounds like Nick Cave and the Bow Seeds.
Bow Seeds.
Bo Banton reference there for old listeners. But yeah, there you go.
I mean, the thing is like, if you want the take from the idiot in the room, even I've been using my one.
I was going to say, you have been using you've got the first generation one.
I have got the first generation one, and I recorded a 3-track demo over the weekend.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I recorded 2 new songs and one that I did a little while ago. It was good fun. And I mean, you know, they really are like pretty basic demos. And actually, I didn't realize. Can you just plug into the? Can you just plug in?
Yeah,
your guitar straight into
into the back.
Yeah, even on the original one.
Yeah, on the original one, you've got the same amp models on there. There's a Fender, there's a Vox, there's an there's a Marshall. I think there's an Orange Style one. I can't remember, but they're all,
that's interesting.
They're actually
because I just went into my Mustang GTX and just like put the Spire next to it and just used the mic or whatever, which worked fine. What's really funny though is, you know how you do the sound check and it says, oh, we'll, you know, play whatever you're playing and then we'll tell you, we'll work out what it is that you're playing and then we will set the EQ parameters or whatever. We often joke about how my guitar playing is like very, very weird and like quite aggressive. When I was playing bass, it thought I was playing guitar, and when I was playing guitar, it thought I was playing drums. So I did have to correct it a couple of times. And I guess I maybe just had to like move it a little bit further away from my actual guitar, because, you know, maybe I was just clattering around a lot. But I really like it. I think it's really good. It's really simple. The monitoring system is really good. It just works really, really well. So I'm it's a yes from me. I'm fully into it and keen to see what the new one does.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. It is fantastically cool. Now, that is way more than the time we actually have on this week's episode. But you can, of course, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds for an entire extra episode every week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5, and you get access to our entire back catalogue of Patreon special episodes. And at the $10 tier, you get all of those things, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. And if your name is Tige Harmon, then you actually get your own very special song on this week's episode as well. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Cheers,
bye.
Kay. Bye.
I know you wanted to check in on the Guitar Nerds when you're feeling blue. You're a Telecaster and a Stratocaster fan. You also like Reverend and a bit of Music Man. You take one look at a Fender custom shop, you know that that's another $3,000 you're gonna drop. And I love 50s Q, it's so unique. Now go and buy the plugin from the plugin of the week. Guitar Nerds, come in your ears, listen to us band night and drink a bunch of beers. We got Matt Knight and Jay Cross too, Patton even shows up when he's got nothing to do. We got JD and Naomi McCloud, but I am the best one cause I'm sexy, jumping loud. But we couldn't do this podcast without you. You're everything a podcast host could ever want is true. Tige Harmon, it's spelled T-I-G-E, it's pronounced just like tiger, so take it. Fine example of what a listener should be. Or it's Tige Harmon. Holly Simpson, Eric Vaughn, John Conway, Jonathan Hackett, and James Dore. Paul Drew, Russell Heelan, Baby, the guitarist. Ty Allen, Carl Harris, Todd Lithgow, Todd Simon, Sean Hughes, Joe Hubbard, Brian Hansen, Shane, and Eric Emmett, Jeffrey Wax, Samuel Frost, Brian Isaac, Evan, Mandolin, and Adam Manley. Robert Butter, what's got out in my kids out? Pedal Worth, Simon Hill, Kevin Stewart, Robinson, Christian Run, Hans, Keith Adams, Michael McVay, Eric Cloud, Ryan McDermott, Jake Cupper, Larry Peters, Joe Brennan, Ken Sayers, Abe Matthews, Catania of the band, Sean Albo, John Langdon, Andy Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nick Nagel, Stephen Burke, Dave Lee, J. Grace, Scott Kennedy, Blake Ryland, Christopher Lawson, Hans Hans, Derek Rich, Lord Norman, J.D. Schultz, Steve Murphy, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Robert Stu, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Moo Gravett.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.